Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Secret Artists Podcast. I'm your host, Annie McGrath, and I'm joined this week by none other than Izzy Sooty. I had a lovely time chatting to Izzy over Zoom and we drew some beautiful flowers at the same time. It's a lovely episode. She was such a pleasure to talk to and such a positive, nice person. So I hope you enjoy the episode and remember to follow at Secret Art Pod on Instagram and Twitter to check out our artworks. See you on the other side. Here goes.
Okay.
I'm delighted to be joined today by comedian, actor and writer Izzy Sooty. Aside from her four brilliant solo musical stand-up shows, Izzy has written loads for TV and radio. Her BBC Radio 4 show, Izzy Sooty's Love Letters, ran for two series and won a Gold Sony Award. Her beautiful memoir, The Actual One, was published in 2014 and her upcoming novel, Jane is Trying, will be published very soon. You will also know Izzy for being excellent in her role as Dobby in the much-loved sitcom Peep Show. Welcome to the podcast, Izzy.
That's like the nicest intro I've ever had.
Oh, great.
Because it contained so loads of extra adjectives like beautiful.
Beautiful. Which, well, yeah. It's not just a mouth. It's great. I've been listening to the audio version of it.
Thanks.
I've forgotten how to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm loving it. It's
Thank
so
you.
Good.
I find it really hard to listen to audiobooks because I try and multitask. I think I try and multitask too much.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I did occasionally have to pause it and then rewind because I found I was just, you know, yeah, you want
yeah, no,
to
totally.
While you're
like,
stuff,
yeah, no, yeah. I think it's like when you read, you can't wash up at the same time unless you're sort of, I don't know, maybe some people can, but.
Because all the pages get wet.
Yes, exactly. I really admire people who can read and eat at the same time. Like if you see people going for a meal on their own and reading, like being really into a book, I'm like, wow, they're two things that for me require full attention for each thing.
Definitely.
But yeah, with audiobooks and podcasts, I always think I could be hanging the washing out. I can't just sit here and listen and do nothing else. Yeah.
I also can't listen to them while I'm falling asleep because I find I concentrate too hard on it and then I'm even more awake.
Yes. My friend Amy can only get to sleep by listening to like Agatha Christie type.
Sort of, really?
It has to be a very specific genre.
That's
like,
funny.
Yeah, I know. And then when I broke up with my boyfriend years ago, it was really sweet. Her and her husband kind of took me in and like gave me loads of pies and minstrels and it was fantastic and like looked after me. I lived with them for like a month.
Yeah.
And on the first night, I was really sad and I slept in bed with Amy and Gavin slept on the sofa.
Aww.
And she was like, we'll have to listen to this. And I was like, okay. And it was really weird. It was, you know, like, when you're little and you go to someone else's house, when you're like 10 and you're like, oh my gosh, they've got a soda stream or it was like that. I was like, oh, this is how you go to sleep. Okay. Yeah.
So funny.
I know.
So you've been writing your book in lockdown, your next book.
Yeah, I've been, it was quite lucky really that I had this book to write when the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
So my kind of work situation didn't change too much. Like most of us, I had to get used to Zoom and I got a mic and did some recording at home and stuff and that was really stressful. But the majority of my work was writing, so it was still weird because we were all in and I've got a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, so it was tough at times to kind of try and find the headspace. And I'd sometimes find I had like 17 minutes to run upstairs and get in bed and write, because that was like the only place that I could do it. So
And what's the premise of this book?
The premise is that it's about a woman called Jane who is working in advertising as a copywriter, living in London, and is engaged and is quite anxious and probably has OCD but won't admit it, and has this massive fear of hospitals. Mm-hmm. But it also has a really fun life and kind of is sort of happy, as you know, we're all complicated, aren't we? But kind of in that way that she's like, yeah, life's okay. And then she finds out that her boyfriend's been cheating on her, and her parents just come and pick her up, and she moves back into her hometown in the north. And her parents are kind of very overprotective in various ways, and her dad is very anxious and used to take them to hospital all the time when they were kids and stuff. So she moves back in with them and gets a job at the local bookshop, but the only book that she's read recently is Sharon Osbourne's autobiography, which she hasn't finished. So she's constantly throughout the book trying to finish Sharon Osbourne's autobiography. And then she thinks she can kind of blag this new life in the bookshop. Because she's kind of used to blagging a bit in advertising, but she has to kind of start again, really. And then a lot of different stuff happens to her, and she has to kind of learn. I wanted to really write about someone who, like, leant on people without realising it, especially men, and who kind of jumped from relationship to relationship. So
it sounds great.
Thanks.
Can't wait to read it.
I really enjoyed writing it. Yeah, it's out on July the 22nd. And it was really interesting because my first book, The Beautiful Memoir, which is so sweet of you to say, because it was about me, there were like loads of bits where, and you'd probably even be able to guess which bits by listening to it, where I really wanted to say more, particularly say about a relationship. And I sort of felt that I couldn't because I didn't know if those people were going to read it. And like, it's so tricky when you're writing a memoir, if you, like, I think I overthink quite a lot about, oh God, if they read it, would they be upset? And, you know, whereas I guess some people are probably better at, and if it's a character, you can actually put loads of real people into it, essentially, but disguise them, and not in a kind of sly way, but also you use bits of people that you might have met once or someone that you know really well and kind of amalgamate them into one character with fiction. And that's just really exciting that you don't have to kind of stick to reality.
Definitely. So is she loosely based on you, or is
like
she,
there are definitely some bits of me in her, and definitely, like, she's quite, I think I've got this attitude of, like, on the first time we meet her, she's got to conduct this like chat with a really snotty poet who actually turns out to be okay, but the poet doesn't really want to be there, and is kind of doing a performance and is a bit arsy about it. And Jane is just like, poets are kind of airy, light people. They're just really happy to be interviewed, and kind of goes in with this attitude of like, I'll just ask her like what rhymes with orange and everything will be fine. And then it kind of really backfires. And I think I've definitely got that thing of like, if I think I can do it, I can do it. Like if when I go skiing, I'm always like, if I think I can do a black run, I can do a black run. Then it's like, no, you really can't. It's just ice. You're going to fall over. So, we've
like
definitely...
Like with a gig, you've got to, like, imagine the audience laughing and then the gig will go well.
Exactly. Like, totally. That thing of, like, definitely glass half full that she's got, I think, too, kind of in that way of, like, when it comes down to it, can I do it kind of thing. And, like, I definitely, like, my Achilles heel is always that, if I'm stressed, I get anxious about my health, which is one of the things that she's got. So, like, I always think Google is quite a bad thing in that way, because before Google, you weren't able to go, oh, I've had a headache for 2 days in a row. Why don't I Google it? That'll be reassuring. And then
every symptom comes up as some form of cancer.
Something really bad. Like, I know, exactly.
That's it.
And I don't know if you find this too, but I sometimes think when you're creative, your imagination is really good in some ways and really bad in some ways, because you can sort of make a reality lots of different things which are completely hypothetical. I've found over the years, and I've had CBT now for essentially like what I suppose is like hypochondria. After my dad died, I had a bit of therapy anyway and then a bit of CBT, and that just helped so much with the worrying about the health thing, because it was like, oh, actually, is this real or is it not? And it's I really like this kind of technical element of CBT. So, but I really wanted to use that for Jane. And then there are bits of her that aren't me, like this fear of hospitals. I quite like hospitals, and I don't know, I find it quite reassuring.
You're the only person I've ever heard.
I know, it's really weird. Like, even when I was younger, my mum was a nurse when I was growing up, and I used to really like bright lights of hospitals
really?
At night. Yeah, I think maybe it reminded me of like going to drop her off or pick her up or something. Like, I associated it with her coming home or something. But but Jane has this massive, massive fear of hospitals, like the hospitals represent being out of control, I suppose. So I wanted to put that in and kind of raise the stakes for her.
Can you tell me about what you've chosen as your muse for us?
In lockdown, there's an actress who started her own flower company. It's called Little Room Blooms. It sounds like I'm doing an advert for her, but I've sort of sent loads of these dried flowers, and they're just really, really beautiful. Me, guys. It's an actress. She wrote a beautiful memoir. No, I've never met her actually, but I like went through this phase of like, oh my god, it's really hard for everyone. People are kind of having to diversify, and she kind of was doing an acting job, and then it got cancelled. Like, a lot of people's work got cancelled, and so I want to support her. And then I've sort of loads and loads of dried flowers and given them to loads and loads of different people. Mm-hmm. I haven't ever drawn them, but...
Great. I'm going to go for some colourful ones because I'm going to use felt tip on yellow card.
Brilliant. I'm using printer paper.
Nice.
Well, paper, A4 paper that can also go in the printer, and a pencil.
Great. God, I love the boobies and blooms.
Yeah.
That are like neon pink sort of fluffy things.
Yeah.
Oh, in a vase that has
shaped
boobs
like
on it.
Boobs. Yeah. Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
What are your flowers that you want?
They're a combination of so they're kind of really fluffy grey ones, and I think I combined two like bunches from the website. So I think the grey ones are kind of, I can't remember what they're called, but you get those in one, and then the kind of more reedy purple and white ones. Actually, it might even be three, because I think
those
kind of
like
candy floss coloured ones. I love those.
Are they real? Yeah.
Yeah, they're all real.
I can't believe
But she must dye them. I've never seen, God, if I was walking through a field of wheat and I saw that neon pink, I'd just be like, this is my dream.
So do you consider yourself to be an artist? I think of you as a very creative person.
I think I consider myself to be creative. And I really wish I had more time to do drawing. And especially, I used to draw an awful lot of comic strips when I was younger. And I used to have, Josie Long used to have run a fanzine called Drawing Mustaches on Magazines Monthly magazine, brackets by monthly.
That's very good.
Yeah. And I used to draw a comic strip for that, which which was a Christian couple who did recipes and talked about God and stuff. And I just really liked doing that. And I think I'm probably an atheist, but that was the way it naturally came out. And they were like just a really sweet couple. And then I drew this one called Tim the Twit, which was based on Tim Henman. So that was quite a while ago, because obviously he doesn't play anymore. But it wasn't that I thought he was a twit. It was just a kind of exaggerated version of him. I think he was always getting pecked by birds or something. So it was a bit more surreal. But
oh, great. I've got it up on the screen. Josie Long drawing moustaches in Magazines Monthly magazine.
That's amazing. It was really funny. She used to... she's put them all online. That's so cool. Yeah, she used to spend a lot of time on them, like a lot of different contributors. Lots of different comics used to write things for it and draw things. And
She should bring it back. That's
she
really
should. And it was kind of almost a bit of a piss take of those. We used to really be into those magazines like Take a Break and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of almost a bit based on them. She used to cut things out of magazines and put speech bubbles on them. And
Yeah, she did some collages for an exhibition I did a couple of years ago. Art by Comedians. They're really good.
She's very, that's her thing, isn't it? Kind of taking bits of real life and then. But yeah, I wish I had more time to knit, and I wish I had more time to draw.
Oh, can you knit? That's impressive.
I can knit, but I I think it's because now I've got two young kids, and especially with the baby not really sleeping, I just only get maybe sort of 40 minutes a day on average to sort of be by myself, I suppose. And so that's then a choice between watching Time at the moment, which we're watching.
Oh god, it's so good.
And I can't knit while I'm watching something like Time. Could you, do you think?
Well, I can't knit.
So you definitely could. Yeah. If you're going to learn to knit, don't do it while you're watching Time.
Yeah.
Because both of those things require your full attention. I've found I can knit to things like Married at First Sight Australia because they don't require quite as much concentration.
Yeah, it's a slightly lighter show.
Yeah. But then I still make mistakes quite easily with knitting. Like I dropped a stitch. I'm knitting a rabbit for my daughter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A purple kind of lilac rabbit, and I've dropped a stitch, and now I don't know where my crochet hook is and stuff. I think when they're a bit older, I'll have an actual where's my crochet hook? Yeah,
when they're older you can get back into it.
Hopefully I'll have like a knitting area.
Yeah. So were you taught to knit, but did your parents or grandparents knit?
I'm sure they did, and my mum sewed more than knitted. When we were growing up and used to make us clothes. So I didn't actually learn to knit till I was doing an acting job, and another actress taught me how to knit, and I really, really loved it.
For
the waiting around. And then actually I did a small part in a film called Pincushion, and I really loved that film.
Oh, great.
And I knitted in that. There was a kind of friendship group scene where we were all knitting. And I was so proud of myself that I could actually knit. Because I was like, learned a few months ago, I'd be faking it now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing of nightmares if you have that on your spotlight profile.
Yeah, and then
you can't actually do it.
Yes, totally. That actually happened to me with an ident where I said I could play the violin and I couldn't.
Oh, God.
And they never asked me to play it in the audition. And then I got the job. And because they hadn't asked me to play it in the audition.
Yeah.
And then they did. So I just had to play an open string. And then the director said, someone's out of tune. And I said, oh, it's me. But I thought it would add to the kind of comedy element of it if one of us was slightly out of tune. And he bought it.
Really?
And I got away with it. Yeah. That's what I mean about me and Jane. Just I have got this streak in me that's like, just keep going. Just keep lying. It'll be okay.
That is incredible. I can't believe they auditioned you for that part and didn't ever ask you to play the violin.
I know. That proves that whatever an actor's got on their CV is probably a lie.
I know.
If you're auditioning someone, you should always ask them to do the thing.
Definitely. So you've crocheted a rabbit, did you say?
Knitted. I don't knitted crochet, actually. Sorry. I don't know. No, it's all right. It's not crocheted. That's a very... I feel like crocheting is such a... It's like skiing and snowboarding. It's like a kind of... Right. There's a bit of crossover, but I wouldn't have the first clue how to do it. But I've knitted the body of the rabbit, and I've dropped a stitch around the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So amazingly, it's that the rabbit has got shoulders in the pattern. It's like shape shoulders. I think that's what I like about knitting. There's like a pattern to follow. It's very black and white, and you kind of get it wrong or get it right.
I don't think I'm patient enough for that sort of thing. Yeah, it's quite mathematical, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. Actually, I've just realised that there's actually no room. You don't put your own slant on knitting. You just follow
the
pattern.
I guess you choose the fabric, don't you?
Yeah, you choose the wool, and you can I think you can become a bit rebellious, and you're like, I'm not going to use the wool they suggest. I'm going to
make it purple.
Yeah, exactly. But isn't it interesting that actually in our jobs we are used to having a lot of agency, and with drawing, I'm sure you know the whole thing is you're creating something on paper from scratch, yet I do really love knitting, and it is literally following a set of instructions.
Sometimes that's quite nice though, isn't it?
Yeah,
being
maybe
told
that's
what
it
to do.
Yeah, and there's something nice about the repetitive
and having
motion.
Something tangible at the end, unlike with stand-up when the gig's just over and then there's that's it.
Yeah, you're right. You've just got the memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is nice having something tangible. But it takes me so long. This sounds like it can't be true, but it is. Like, I've been knitting this cat jumper for probably three years, I think. So it's now too small for my daughter. And I'm hoping that my son will wear it But I still haven't finished it. And it's like this, so...
Because it's hard or because it's become this burden?
It is very hard. Sorry, he's outside the door. If you don't mind him trying to get in, then Ellis is around, but I've locked the door.
If you need to tend to him, then please do. So you've obviously got a thing about animals, because in your beautiful memoir, you talk about a papier-mâché penguin.
Oh, the penguin, yeah.
That you make for your ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Was that true?
That was true. Yes, absolutely, it was true. And actually, the Tim the Twit series of comic strips were kind of done for that boyfriend as well.
Oh, nice.
I started drawing them and giving them to him. That was it. Tim Henman. He was always being pecked by hens.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yes, that's it. I couldn't. Yeah, that's it. It's a long time ago now. Yes, I made this papier-mâché penguin out of. It ended up costing so much to make. It cost like about 100-150 quid for the ingredients, kind of equipment,
materials.
Materials, yeah. And it was it was meant to be like. Because I didn't have very much money, it was like, oh, I'll make him something. I won't buy it. And then it ended up being so massively expensive.
Oh, no.
But he didn't. It was kind of the nail in the coffin, in a sense. Because I'd put so much, you know, like if you put so much effort into something and someone, in a sense, you're showing them the effort rather than the thing. You want them to see
that how much work pages and time and
yes. Yes. That's why you don't want to be too good at things, because they look effortless. You've got to be quite good.
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
Do you still do papier-mâché?
No, that was the last, that was my first and last foray.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And this penguin is still somewhere in South London. It got put into an attic. Roy, he got put into an attic.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah, and
hopefully he's been
claimed by a child or I'd love it if I found a penguin. Would you? If you went in moved house and
yeah, I would.
And his stomach. I think I said this in the beautiful memoir, but his stomach was shelves. Like he had shelves in his stomach, and
it sounds very cool.
Yeah,
and useful. Who doesn't want a penguin with shelves?
Exactly.
You also, in your beautiful memoir, talk about playing netball at school. And I play netball and I'm desperate to get a sort of comedian's game going. I think it's really fun.
Yeah.
I was trying to work out what position you were, but I don't know how tall you are.
I'm 5'4". I can't actually even remember what position I was.
So centre court.
I think I was centre court, actually. Are the tall people the ones who shoot the... Can anyone, I can't remember the rules, can anyone have a go at...
No, just goal attack and goal shooter.
What
but normally
position?
The tallest ones are goalkeeper or goal shooter. So guarding the goal or shooting.
So what? How tall are you?
5'2".
Oh, so you can't be one of the goal shooters?
No, although I play 5-a-side, so we actually change position.
Oh, okay,
So it's quite fun. But yeah, I do sometimes get stuck in goalkeeper and just can't do anything really. I love it.
Is there a lot of standing around? It's hockey that there's a lot of standing around. I seem to remember with hockey you'd spend ages just not doing anything.
Really? Yeah,
whereas
hated
netball,
hockey at
yeah me
I never
too
really got into it.
Yeah, nor did I. Just remember being really cold and
And there's loads of like not props, what's it called, like accessories, like the mouth guard and the stick and the shin pads.
That's right. Yeah,
of, like lugging stuff around.
That's so true. And the other thing is that we used to smoke on the tennis courts and on the field, and that was the place that we also played hockey, and that seemed really wrong. Whereas netball was inside, and I didn't used to smoke in the sports hall, so it seemed like yes, this is the place for netball. Whereas when I was playing hockey, I was like, no, this is where we hang out at break time.
Is where we smoke.
Yeah.
How's your drawing coming along?
Okay, I'm on the kind of ferny bit now. I was just thinking that drawing requires an awful lot of patience. It's like you look at the thing and go, how do I... I suppose as time goes on, you develop your own style and learn. Yeah, learn.
Yeah. I'm not very good with felt tips, I've realised.
I think felt tips are a great choice. I think I sort of dismiss things quite easily because I don't know very much about drawing. I'd be like, oh no, felt tips is like too childlike or something. But actually, that's completely wrong. I'm sure you get a really interesting...
No, it does look like a child's drawing.
That's all right, though.
Yeah. Are your kids into art? Lots of kids are, aren't
they? Yeah, no, they are, actually. I think Betty, who's six, she really likes writing stories. That's her main thing. And she sort of makes these little books and draws illustrations with them as well. She does. She likes drawing mainly women in kind of dresses and stuff. And my two-year-old, who you might be able to hear in the background, he has just started to draw circles. He really likes drawing circles. Wow. He sort of started to try and draw faces, I think. So they both will sit and draw, which is really nice. Like sometimes I go to the kitchen to do something, I come back and they're both sitting down at the table drawing.
That's great.
It's really lovely. And our house is quite messy. I sort of try and keep on top of it, and so does Ellis, but neither of us is naturally tidy. So the dining room table's just got piles of like colouring books and masses of felt tips and paper. And actually, in a way, I think that's better than, you know, that they can, at any point in any room, they can normally pick up something to draw with and something to draw on.
That's so good that they just do it sort of their own accord.
It's not like this, it's drawing time now. And also he's drawn all over the wall, and I sort of care much less than, even though we are going to try and move later in the year, so we'll have to do something about it, but I don't really care. I just sort of think
you can paint over it.
It's fine.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You wrote something called Dear Mother. So for listeners haven't seen it, it's a short film about a woman who lives in the Tate and interacts with the artworks. And I loved it. It was so nice to watch.
Thank you. I haven't thought about that for ages. It was quite a long time ago.
How did it come about?
They just said, they emailed my agent and said, we're doing this series of short films, and would Izzy have any ideas about one? And I thought, they wanted us to involve the art, and we had access to Tate Britain, I think it was. And I was like, gosh, how do I involve art in something? And so I guess I made it more about the character being lonely but she interacts with the paintings a bit, doesn't she? And kind of does voices for them and stuff.
Yeah, she sort of makes up the situations and chats to them. And it was nice. So did you go in to the gallery and like research the paintings first and then go
went in and had a look, decided which ones I'd like to be involved in it, and then when we filmed it was empty, which was really exciting. It felt like
that's so cool.
When Beyonce gets to go to like Harrods before anyone, it was a bit like that. It was kind of like wow, I'm in here with, I think something about going to galleries when they're very busy, you sometimes feel like you have to move on quickly, don't you? Or like, am I standing too close to it? Am I blocking someone's view?
And you've always got someone sort of really irritating describing the picture in a pretentious way.
Yeah.
And trying to concentrate on.
So true.
Looking at it.
That's why I think I include myself in this, often feel a bit intimidated by, oh, what style of art do I like? I don't know, you know, in the same way as actually I wanted to write a bit about that in Janie's trying that thing of her working in a bookshop and only reading Sharon Osbourne's autobiography. Well, people are a bit snobby about the fact that that's what she's reading, but she's like, actually, I'm really enjoying it. Like, you know, and she doesn't know very much about literature. I sort of, I hate it when people feel that they can't kind of do something because they're like, I don't know enough about it. I don't know enough about it. And I certainly feel that with art sometimes. Yeah, it's not meant to be. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not meant for me. I don't understand it. Or when I used to work in the wine industry for years, I used to get very sad when people would just say, oh, I don't like Chardonnay, or I'll just have Moët, especially as it's pronounced Moët, but you always sound so, actually, it's Moët et Chandon. But in our training, they were like, you must correct people and tell them it's Moët. And I was like, I am not going to do that if a company manager orders 10 bottles to go to, like, as corporate gift.
Also, why must you do that?
Exactly. So it doesn't matter, does it? It's just the kind of anglicised version of it in a way. Yeah. But, like, I used to kind of try and suggest wines to people that were actually often cheaper than the ones that they'd normally go for, but that would go better with the meal that they were eating or something. So I think people get similarly intimidated with wine. It's like, oh God, I don't know what I'm... And it's like, don't be intimidated, because if you like it, it's not wrong. And if you taste Sauvignon Blanc and don't taste gooseberries but actually taste apples, that's fine. That's what you taste. It isn't wrong. And I kind of feel similarly about art, but as I get older, I'm more confident at going... I don't really like that, and that's fine. Yeah. Like, it doesn't mean that I think it's shit. It just means that doesn't do anything for me personally, you know? I think sometimes it's that thing of, like, I should like it because it's, you know, it's well-known, or this style is well-known, or,
Definitely. I feel like music doesn't have that. It's more accepted to sort of like what you like.
It is, definitely, isn't it? And to have quite strong opinions, like, you'll definitely get people who are like, oh, no, I don't, and it's like... I don't think you'd be the same about, you'd be so confident to do that. Yeah, you're right.
About painting or something.
Yeah, people definitely feel perhaps more of an instant personal connection with music, perhaps on the whole, in a way that they might not with, that might take longer with.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Did you study English literature or art, or what's your sort of...
I studied English language. For A-level I did theatre studies, English language and French, and I failed French because I hadn't done any work whatsoever. And then I got a C in general studies, which I was astonished about, because I sort of rather arrogantly thought, oh, I'll get an A for general studies and I can just tell people that I've got 3 A-levels. And then I still can, not that anyone ever talks about A-levels now anyway. But but yeah, I failed French. But I did... and I did a degree in acting at drama school, so it wasn't... Yeah, it was a bit academic, but not really. And then I did 3D art GCSE though, and I really remember loving that. So I don't think it's offered at all schools, but it was ceramics mainly.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I was really into using things to make the clay into different shapes. So I put loads of clay through a mincer, you know, like how you'd make mince meat, and made a Weetabix box in 3D, so the Weetabix, the bowl, half of the bowl kind of came out of the box, if that makes sense, kind of towards you, and then the Weetabix sat in the milk. And I really loved...
That's really cool.
Did
you still do any sort of ceramics?
I did do a course at Morley College in Elephant and Castle probably, gosh, like maybe 7 or 8 years ago now, on the wheel. I had done a bit of work on the wheel at school, but I didn't like that as much, to be honest, because I found it quite tricky to master. I found it really annoying having to get all the air bubbles out of the clay, but I must have had to do that at school, so I don't know why I found it so annoying as a 30 something year old to be like, God, why can't someone else get the air bubbles out? would have paid someone. Maybe it wasn't. Yeah, I think you're right. I think if I'd really enjoyed doing it, I wouldn't have cared about the air bubbles. Because it's kind of part of, you know, the process, isn't it?
I just didn't ever like the feeling of, like, when the wet clay dries on your hands. I hate that feeling.
Really? I really like collecting ceramic stuff. And as I'm looking around this room now, I can see like a vase that I bought from a charity shop. It is slightly, looks homemade and is slightly leaning to the right. And I really like that about it. But it would also like hold flowers. Yeah. And then this other one that I really like, I can't remember where I got it from, like a craft place, like a craft fair type thing. And then I actually think I got it from these little studios near where I used to live that used to open up. But it's layers of clay that have been, so they've done a base and then they've put layers of clay to form a vase. So lots of strips rather than layers, sorry, it's kind of going up almost like a leaf, and they're all pastel coloured. Cool. Yeah. I really love pastel, like bright pastel colours.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe why I like these flowers so much, because they're sort of really bright.
They're beautiful. Yeah. I'm definitely going to get some.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel Kitson's very into his ceramics, isn't he?
Yeah, he made the vase, actually, that I'm drawing now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's amazing at it.
Yeah, he is. He's really got into it. And he lives very near us, and in his garden, he's sort of got loads of pots in his garden that he's made that are really lovely. And the other day I was like, why are these in the garden? He's like, well, why not? But they're only getting earth and rain on them. And I was like, oh, yeah. It just seemed like they were too beautiful to be battered by the elements. But they're full.
They're quite sturdy, aren't they?
They are. And maybe it's a good test for them. And it's a big thing. Like, it's definitely, like, everyone finds, I think it's really good if you're creative in your job, but you do stuff that's creative that is just for the sake of being creative rather than...
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, to have another outlet that's not, like, you know, your job that you're being paid for.
Yeah, exactly, where you're not thinking, how is this going to work over an hour or how it...
Yeah, it's been interesting over lockdown to see what sort of creative outlets people have turned to.
Yes, it's true. It's like, you don't have kids, do you?
No, I don't.
So just to get a different view, because basically I've been going, if this had happened to me earlier in my life before I'd had children, or if I had decided not to have them, would I have done all this stuff that everyone seems to be doing, like learning calligraphy?
Making banana bread.
Yeah, I managed to do a little bit of banana bread, not as much as I would have liked, because I absolutely adore banana bread, especially hot off the press. I sort of had these, I sort of found myself at times going, oh man, I would love to like be doing a calligraphy course or something. And then I sort of did say to myself, would you be doing that if you, because the whole day was taken up with the kids, especially when we were all in, it was just everything revolved around routine, and it felt kind of at times very surreally repetitive. So I don't know if I had perhaps a little bit more room in the routine, would I? Did you end up doing loads of stuff that...
I did a lot of painting. So at the beginning of lockdown, I was on a potato farm with my mum. And I was very lucky in that I had quite a lot of space and a nice room that was really light. And I just painted like every day, which was great. That's and I actually great. Managed to sell some of them and like made a website and stuff for my paintings. So got to do a few commissions for people. I think I did get quite a lot done in like the first section of lockdown.
Yeah.
But then
it was still a novelty then, I suppose, wasn't it? We didn't know how long it was going to go on for. And
definitely. It was strange not gigging, or I was trying to do more writing.
It's hard, isn't it, when there's no gig to try it out at? That's what I did. I did some Zoom gigs, but it's so hard to gauge whether new stuff works, isn't it? Like, without the audience there.
I did some Zoom gigs that were more like sort of chat shows and games and stuff, rather than like stand up to no one, because that just seemed too harrowing a prospect.
Yeah, it's
at that
very
time.
Very odd.
I went through a phase in the first lockdown of having an espresso after lunch and putting double cream in it.
Oh my gosh! Like,
This cannot go on.
But I love, I love cream and coffee. It also makes me think I'm in New York, which is...
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's
that's a real treat. I'm very into that. I don't have caffeinated coffee anymore, actually.
Oh, really?
So I have this
How
sort
do
of...
How sort of wake up?
Just tea. And I have, I stopped having caffeinated coffee because I was getting these sort of migraine type thing years ago and I had to give up caffeine, and it's fine now. But I've never, I just thought, oh, I don't really miss it. There's like a really good coffee place here where it tastes no different if it's decaf.
Well, that's so good.
Yeah. I think if I actually had a caffeinated coffee now, it would be like, I'd be running around.
Buzzing.
And, yeah.
Did you get headaches after, I mean, I know you had migraines anyway, but then when you stopped having caffeinated coffee, did you get like withdrawal headaches?
No, I wasn't ever much of a kind of coffee, you know, they get those people who are like, they can't function without coffee. I was never really
don't
like
even
that anyway.
Talk to me.
Yeah, exactly. I don't get out of bed until I've had eight coffees. No, I did probably used to drink a coffee every day, but just the flat white or something. So no, thankfully I didn't. And also I was still sneakily having tea, even though the guy said to remove caffeine. So I was like, I can have.
Yeah, you've got to have something.
Yeah. But it did the trick.
Especially with young kids, I imagine you need.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there was a mum that I met when I'd first had Betty who didn't drink caffeine at all for sort of, she was a kind of just very healthy person. And I was like, wow, like that is, I mean, some nights you've had like 2 hours broken sleep.
Yeah. Was she quite annoying?
No, actually, she was really lovely. Yeah. It's always easier, isn't it, if people who do things that you're kind of a bit in awe of are a bit annoying, because then you go,
so
you know, you've paid the price by being annoying, but no, she wasn't. She was really nice.
Yeah, it's almost more annoying. So one thing I meant to ask, do you own any art? I know you've got all those lovely ceramics.
Yes, I own one painting, and it's by Estée McLeod, who, it's kind of like, actually, having said realism, abstract or realism, I think it's probably a bit abstract. And now I'm going to demonstrate what I just said about how I think people who don't have the language to talk about art should still love art. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how to describe it. I think it's got, I think it's oil. If you look her up, she works with lots of different textures and stuff.
That painting that's the first thing you come to on her website is exactly like the flowers we're drawing. The same colours.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, they're really beautiful.
I really like, I really like her. I'd call it like warped realism, maybe.
Yeah.
But warped feels a bit like there's a statement there, and I don't think there is. It's just very beautiful. She ran a lot of free courses in lockdown. Again, one of the things I was like, if this had happened to me when I was 25, I'd be doing this course and I probably would have just been lying in bed watching Netflix. But she ran some free courses, which I thought was brilliant, and they were, and I always meant to do them and sort of got the emails and then just didn't manage it because
that's really cool. That apple that's pink with sort of abstract shapes within it. It's a video. Pink lady, love it. Oh wow.
So I bought myself a painting of hers for my 40th. We went to pick it up from Bristol, and it was just really exciting to be going to collect it. And I didn't know which wall to hang it on, and I didn't. And then Amy, who loves Agatha Christie, came and said, it needs to go on this white wall, and it needs to be the only thing on the wall. And I was like, oh yeah. That makes sense. I think I was trying to sort of hang something else next to it, because we've got lots of framed things in this house and some prints and stuff. And I've got another little thing by John Dillnott. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he does, again, these colours that I love, really kind of neonish and some pastel colours, I suppose, but mostly neon. He does these kind of the mini prints of insects and lots of things to do with nature, and I've got a minerals thing.
Great.
Yeah, and they're very detailed, and
those are called the sort of crystals. Are they crystals on the left?
They look, I think they are crystals. So yes, I've got that too, which I need to frame. I don't think I look after things very well. Like I break jewellery, and I don't really have many things of value, because that's the one I've got
that's really cool. I love that. Yeah, really nice.
It's
colours.
Beautiful, isn't it? The colours are great. They're kind of almost hallucinogenic. They're quite So I haven't framed it yet.
Quite symmetrical as well, like where all the drawings are positioned on the page.
Yes, that's true. They're all there for a reason, aren't they? I think the thing at the top almost looks like a suite, and the pink.
Yeah. I like the sort of spirally shell as well.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So did you meet Esther McLeod when you picked up
the... No, I didn't. It was from a gallery, so I've never met her, but I'd like to.
Yeah. Painting or papier-mâché?
Papier-mâché.
Abstract or realism?
Realism.
Tate Modern or Tate Britain?
Tate Britain.
Dawn or dusk?
Dusk.
North or south?
North.
Love letters or sexting?
Love letters. I love the idea that I'd say sexting.
Really off-brand.
Yeah. This is the real me, guys.
Writing or performing?
Writing.
Tortured artist or rational IT worker?
Have to be tortured artist.
Mark or Jeremy?
Oh, a Jeremy, I think.
Private view or view of privates?
Private view.
Mature cheddar or soft goat?
Oh, mature cheddar.
Wing attack or goal defence?
Goal defence.
Invisibility or super strength?
Super strength.
Can you separate the art from the artist?
Oh, God, the eternal question. Can I say depends on the artist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can say what you like. Art or tech?
Art.
Art or food?
Art, she says, sadly.
Art or books?
Both.
And finally, dicks or pussies?
Pussies.
Great. That's the quick fire round. Thank you.
There we go.
Oh, I love it. That's great. You've really nailed the sort of fluffiness.
Oh, thanks. That's the thing I enjoyed doing the most, the kind of ferny ones.
Did you blend it with your finger?
No.
Did you smudge it? It looks really nice and soft.
Thanks.
I love the detail of the vase as well. It's great.
Thank
Little
you.
Blooms. I love it. It's so good. Mine's a bit...
Oh, wow. I love it. That's great. It's so delicate. It's
like
really elegant. Yeah. And I love the colour of the roses. They kind of look a bit like hawthorn. It looks like a winter thing.
Yeah, I couldn't tell whether they were like thistles almost.
Yeah, didn't know if they were like... Oh, yeah, it's lovely.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It's been really nice chatting to you.
I've loved it.
Thank you so much for listening. And thank you to Izzy for being excellent. If you're not already following her on Twitter, then WTF, make sure you are. Her handle is at Izzy City, and you can find out about her upcoming work there. Her book, Jane is Trying, comes out on the 22nd of July, so make sure you get a copy of that. If you want to see mine and Izzy's artworks from today, then check out Secret Artists on Instagram and Twitter, at Secret Art Pod. If you want to look up the artists we spoke about, they were Esther McLeod and John Dillnott. What else is there to say? Oh yeah, the flowers that we drew, our muse today, are from Little Room Blooms, so do check them out. And thank you again so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, give us a nice little review. And if you didn't, I'm sorry. Okay, have a good week. Thank you. Goodbye. Secret Artists is a Turtle Canyon comedy production for Acast. Music by Alistair Clayton. Quickfire Round music by Steve Dunn.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.